This is Radio Influence.
Got him from the white trunks. He hurt him.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he sports the top.
Wow. And here comes as a mention. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Bellator 175 took place on Friday night at the Allstate Arena in Rosemont, Illinois. It was headlined by a rematch as Muhammad King Mo Lawal evened up the score with Quentin Rampage Jackson with the decision victory. We are going to recap Bellator 175 on this episode of the MMA Report post-fight podcast on Radio Influence. Daniel Galvan and I are going to give our thoughts on what happened at Bellator 175, and we plan to discuss how Rampage looked fighting at heavyweight, Bellator's decision to book King Mo versus Ryan Bader at Bellator 180 in June. Yes, that is a spike portion, not the pay-per-view. Emmanuel Sanchez calling for a title fight after missing weight by 3.5 pounds. Sergey Karatanov bouncing back with a TKO victory. Noah Lahat improving to 2-0 in Bellator, and Steve Cazzola scoring the second fastest victory in Bellator lightweight division history. Now, before I bring in Daniel, I'll tell you about my sponsor, Fight TV. This is the app you need to have on your phone or tablet to access multiple MMA, boxing, and professional wrestling events. The Fight app is filled with a ton of professional wrestling content this weekend as they are live from day two of WrestleCon in Orlando, and on Saturday night, you can watch Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor on Fight for $29.99. Download the Fight app today by going to Fight, FITE.TV/RadioInfluence/. Once again, that is Fight, FITE.TV/RadioInfluence/. And that link is also available on RadioInfluence.com. Daniel, how's it going, man?
Hey, man, I tell you what, I'm gonna tag along with you. Watch ROH Supercard of Honor. I'm not gonna watch it tonight. It's tonight on Saturday. Maybe watch it on demand or something. I assume it's on demand because I'm looking forward to that card. There is an awesome ladder match between the Hardy Boys and the Young Bucks. And this is the time of year, Jason, where, you know, when I was very young, you know, like a year ago, I loved professional wrestling. And this time of year, WrestleMania season, is when I kind of catch up. And if you're a fan of the independent scene, watching ROH Supercard of Honor to me is just the perfect thing, because when you look at the card, you're going to see a lot of guys are going to be in the WWE. And just to watch the Hardy Boys in a ladder match, that might be better than anything you watch on the WrestleMania card. Still, I'm excited, Jason. It's wrestling time. the sport is baseball time tomorrow. Are you kidding me? I can't wait to do some daily fantasy. And also, women's basketball front and center. I mean, good time to be a sports fan.
Yeah, a ton of things going on in sports. I tell you, I actually got a, you know, I had the WWE Network at one time, an old school wrestling fan, don't really watch it today, but kind of got an email where WWE's trying to get me back, basically give me like 3 months for like $10. I might have to tune in well, WrestleMania. I might have to.
So you know what they're doing. Okay, this is what they're doing. I love Dave Meltzer's website, Wrestling Observer, with Brian Alvarez, and they're actually offering this 3-month free trial for the WWE Network. And the day after it expires is whenever they have to report to the investors, I think, how many subscribers they have.
That's awesome.
That, so they're gonna report a big time improvement, but you're getting the product for free. So they do it every year, and it's a great time to capitalize on it. Just be vigilant in terms of kind of unsubscribing.
That's hilarious. By the way, at that Ring of Honor card, actually, King Mo is going to be at that card here. As we're, of course, recording this here on a late Saturday morning, early Saturday afternoon. So he's actually going down there. But he did get the win last night at Bellator 175. An okay fight card. I mean, obviously, it had its high moments with Cazzola and Karatanov with their knockouts in the first round. Noah Lahat survives a little bit of a scare early on when he gets dropped by a jab there, and then the last two fights end up going the distance. I think in terms of the main event, we kind of saw that was the way it was going. Rampage, he had his moments there in the second round. He had King Mo rocked. King Mo admitted that after the fight was over, said, hey, he had me, and, you know, instincts had to kind of get in there. And but I thought Mo had a very smart game plan. I thought, you know, for the most part, it was a very similar game plan that he had against Czech Congo a couple years ago when he had a heavyweight matchup against Czech, who has been a training partner of Rampage Jackson. But really, I think where Rampage went all wrong in this was when he went for a takedown. I believe that was in the third round. I'm like, man, what are you doing?
Yeah, dude, you know where Rampage went wrong with this. It was in the lead up to this fight. All right, the preparation was where Rampage truly went wrong with this, because that wrestling attack by him certainly didn't put him in the best position to win. But I think the biggest reason why he lost this fight was he was playing tired in round three, Jason. And that's kind of what happens when you weigh in 250-some pounds. He fought like it. And honestly, my general analysis of this one was just like a lot of the mental things that go into preparation is kind of what did Rampage in here, because defensively, I don't know if his wrestling was up to par of what you would assume his takedown defense would be. And that third round, that was the deciding round, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
And King Mo showed up. Rampage didn't. With that being said, Rampage still kind of showcased his power in his hands. And my general thoughts is, like, this was a general King Mo victory. It's never good if your commentator says, like, to King Mo, boos are like his entrance music or something, which is, like, not a good reputation for one of your marquee fighters. But, King Mo took care of business. He's never lost back-to-back fights. He was incredibly vulnerable here, and he simply took care of business.
It's amazing to me, no matter where King Mo fights, he gets booed. You know, and I think that, look, some of his performances, I think, play into that. You look at, you know, his Satoshi Ishii fight wasn't exactly the most exciting fight. Even the matchup against Phil Davis, not the most exciting fight, but he has this, you know, for whatever reason, fans just don't like him. Personally, I like King Mo. You know, I think he's a guy that when you get him in an interview, if you ask him the right questions, you're going to get a really interesting response out of him. And he does have a very different view. And look, he's an old school fighter. He's that guy that says, hey, I'm going to take a fight anyway, you know, anytime. Give me that opportunity there. You know, so he went out there. It was a very smart game plan by him. You got to give him kudos. I mean, Rampage Jackson, you know, obviously a lot was made of his weight. And heading into the fight, my mindset was either we're going to be sitting here talking about, oh, my God, what does Rampage Jackson look at heavyweight? Look at this massive knockout that he had. Or we're going to kind of be talking the way we're talking about Rampage. And I think the thing that I saw out of him, you definitely saw he had a different mentality in this matchup against King Mo as opposed to his first fight. His first fight against King Mo, he was very much being aggressor early on, where you saw him in this fight, he was on his heels. He was ready for those takedown to defense. You know, he wasn't maybe as aggressive as you expect Rampage Jackson to be. He admitted that, you know, King Mo definitely had improved on his boxing since their first matchup. But I think that, you know, I always like to say Father Time eventually catches up to you, and you have to look at Rampage and think that. I thought he looked a little slow in terms of how he was performing in the cage. You know, he talked about it before and after this fight about the thyroid issue that he does have of, you know, he would like to fight at 205 pounds, but I think he's kind of come to that realization that maybe 205 pounds is not realistic. He's working with a new nutritionist and trying to get everything squared away. You know, he really didn't give any indications on what's next for him. Everything you kind of hear is that he is, you know, obviously he's no longer contractually obligated to Bellator, but there is a contract there that he has to, you know, that he has with the UFC. Now, whether the UFC wants to honor that contract or not, you know, Scott Coker, after the fact, was not really saying much, because I think he didn't want to kind of put himself in any type of tampering situation. But I do feel that if the UFC decides that they do not want to be in the Rampage Jackson business anymore, it wouldn't surprise me if Scott Coker says, you know what, let's bring back Rampage, because there is still a fan base that wants to see Rampage Jackson fight. And Friday night was an example of that there outside of Chicago.
Yeah, and I will say overall, this was a pretty pessimistic outing for Rampage Jackson in terms of, like, when it comes to the delicate balance of an aging mixed martial arts fighter, one night you look amazing, the next night the pumpkin is there. Like, you just turn into a pumpkin. And this was almost a pumpkin performance out of Rampage. I think a big part of that is kind of highlighted by his comments entering this fight. And obviously motivation is just a thing that's kind of tagged Rampage for the last few years in terms of, like, how seriously, how much does he care? What's his long-term interest? And if you're not all in 2 feet in, that's just going to show in your fight. With that being said, I would not be surprised at all if Rampage flips the switch, much like the Cleveland Cavaliers. We expect them to do so in the postseason, right? Like, he is coming off a 5-5 win streak. Potentially, this loss to King Mo could light a fire under him, and he could come out and score some knockouts. Rampage Jackson is still a named fighter. He's still the type of guy that will get you some eyeballs and create an opportunity to have a moment in the Bellator cage. And that's kind of what Bellator has been missing the last few events, is just the luck of the draw of having a moment, something people will talk about. And that just hasn't happened in the last few cards. They haven't really had an Eddie Alvarez, Michael Chandler moment. And it's not something that they can control, right? It's like total random luck. But Rampage is the kind of guy who he can go out there and score a sweet knockout that people will talk about. Still, this is a resource that is obviously dwindling.
Yeah, I mean, even Scott Coker mentioned it. He said, you know, Rampage Jackson's in the fourth quarter of his career. But, you know, we have seen those guys succeed in Bellator in terms of, you know, they are fires that fans still want to see. On the King Mo side of things, it's announced right after the event is over that he is going to take on Ryan Bader, a part of Bellator 180. This is going to be that four-fight card that's going to air on Spike prior to the pay-per-view on June 24th. I know there seemed to be, and I think that what's happening is Bellator has, in a way, created confusion with the fans. I think the fans don't even know what the difference is between Bellator 180 and the Bellator pay-per-view, which I think ultimately is kind of a mistake Bellator has made in terms of how they're promoting that event. But it's going to be on Spike. It's going to be the feature bout of the card on Spike there. And it's, to me, it's an odd fight booking because, okay, so now you're going to have Ryan Bader fight. So does this mean Phil Davis isn't ready? And if Phil Davis is ready, are we talking about Phil Davis, Alessio Sicara for the Bellator light heavyweight title?
I'm going to go throw up somewhere. That sounds awful. Alessio Sicara, Phil Davis, when you have Bader, when you have King Mo, that would be a bad decision. Especially if, like, Alessio Sicara goes out there and gets a first-round knockout, then your marquee fight is Sicara versus Bader, which, you know what, maybe down the line that will take place. But I think the general messaging is either they wanted to do a big TV fight, but they probably didn't want to do a title fight on TV, given that you had, like, Aaron Pico on that main card, I think. So I guess the next best thing is to do this King Mo Ryan Bader fight. I actually don't hate the booking at all. I think it really sets up a number one contender. But when did Phil Davis win that light heavyweight championship? How long ago was that, Jason?
That would have been last year.
Last year. So for him not to defend that title.
Would that be in November?
I got it. November 2016. It's been 141 days since he's defended, since he won the title. And so we're taking into account that fight's not going to happen until Bellator 180. And then Phil Davis will fight the winner. That'll be his first title defense. That is an absurd amount of time.
Well, here's the other thing. Okay, so what happens if King Mo wins? Now you've just lost Ryan Bader to a title fight for the next year at least. Like, I think from a promotional aspect, I understand you want to have a big fight on Bellator 180, but in terms of light heavyweight, which is not a deep division at all, you know, that's why I thought you should have done King Mo versus Liam McGeary if Liam McGeary gets through Lent Vassell, which I do expect that to happen. To me, that would have been the fight. You have Bader Davis, McGeary, and Mo. That could be a main event, co-main event of a card. So if something were happening to one of the guys in the main event, you got, you know, another guy in the card that could step in. I mean, I understand why Bellator booked the fight the way they did, and I understand that Bader wanted to be on that New York City card. So obviously, my understanding is they do not want to do three title fights on that card. But I look at it and from is if King Mo wins that fight, which I might favor King Mo in that fight. I think from a Bellator aspect, Mo winning that fight, I don't know is what's best for their light heavyweight division in terms of having multiple title contenders lined up for not just 3 months, 6 months from now, but from, you know, 9 months, 12 months, 18 months from now.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I guess another part of the discussion is at the end of the day, King Mo versus Ryan Bader is probably the biggest fight you can do at 205 anyway. No, not including the Legends division, obviously. I think Bader and King Mo pops off a little more than Bader, Phil Davis, but then that does kind of devalue championship. So maybe their thinking is like, we are just going to go all in on Bellator 180. we wouldn't put on a product on TV that will entice people to purchase the pay-per-view, and we'll worry about the title later. And that could be thinking. I can't blame that.
I'm worried about what's Bellator 181 going to look like.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, and look, and they're going to put the, you know, Bellator's going to put the best product they can on, but it's one of these things that we have seen in the past where they have put on these massive cards, and then like the next two or three cards have no name value. And that's where I look at Bellator, I go, hey, it's great that you're putting on this great pay-per-view and this great, you know, four fight, you know, card on Spike on June 24th. But what's that next event going to look like? Also, here's the interesting thing about it. They're only doing one event in the month of May. So there's going to be a lot of time to lead up. I just feel like if McDonald Daly was on that pay-per-view, I think that pay-per-view looks a lot more appetizing to that casual fan who's debating on whether they're going to put, you know, $50 down to watch that pay-per-view, and are you not going to order UFC 212 at the beginning of the month?
Man, maybe they do the McDonald Daily rematch at Bellator 180. They do the fight on May 19th, and then they put him back in the cage in 24.
Here's what happens. One of them can't make weight. The fight gets scratched, and we just move it a month and a half later. You know how realistic, unfortunately, that is?
Yeah, and dude, oh my God, you need to save that audio clip.
No, Rory McDonald, okay, here's option two. Rory McDonald can't get a visa to get in England. There's option two.
Well, here's one. Paul Daly, he can't get a visa to get in England, even though he's in England. I think that's more realistic. I don't know how visas work.
But, you know,
dude, how great would that be? That would be the most Bellator thing. Although I will say, man, I don't know. Look, okay, so Daly McDonald and Bellator 180 would, like, make the card be awesomer. I actually think this is a good card. Like, I'm super looking forward to this one. But, Jason, I don't think that fight matters to the pay-per-view buy rate. Like,
I'm just thinking giving even to the – I mean, I've heard from hardcore – people I would consider hardcore fans that they're like, I'm not quite all in on this pay-per-view. I feel like if they would have had – I mean, I'm sorry – okay, Aaron Pico may in 12, 24 months from now, we may be talking about Aaron Pico as a guy who's going to be in title contention at 155 pounds. People around AKA think he is the next great thing in MMA. And only time's going to tell whether he can ultimately live up to those expectations. But, you know, he's not, and I know Scott Coker and Bellator, they love the prospects of Aaron Pico. But let's be honest about it. Aaron Pico is not selling 20 pay-per-view units because he's on the card. You know, the people that are going to buy, the people who want to watch Aaron Pico fight, they were already buying the pay-per-view.
Yo, Aaron Pico, by the way, he needed to be on the TV portion of that card.
I keep thinking about that. I go, I think I know you want Michael Page on that London card. I get it. But you think Michael Page went as a pay-per-view buys if he was on the pay-per-view as opposed to maybe their plan is, hey, Michael Page is going to win in May and then we're going to put him on the June card. Who knows?
Yeah, well, also, like, so Bellator is talking about doing pay-per-views long-term. Like, this is going to be a thing without a set schedule, but this is going to be a thing. Aaron Pico is one of your prospects. He's your version of, I don't know, Byron Buxton if you're a Twins fan. You don't know if he's going to pan out, but this is one of your best lottery tickets to build pay-per-views around in a year and a half, 2 years. And I think the best way to create a star out of Aaron Pico is to put him in front of the most eyeballs. And I think if you put him on TV, Jason, and you really market the hell out of him, you're going to get more eyeballs than if he was even on the pay-per-view card. And I get the optimism surrounding Aaron Pico. When you look at his track record as a wrestler, his success as like a freshman in high school is absurd. And also apparently he has a lot of like boxing credentials. I believe I read that. He did real well as a young lad.
Yeah, he did.
So
yeah.
This appears to be a guy that is the, you know, a good prospect.
Yeah, I mean, he's training at AKA. He trains his boxing at Wild Card Gym. He's doing jiu-jitsu at 10th Planet under Eddie Bravo. So, I mean, this kid's, you know, all the potential in the world. I kind of think that it would probably be better for him if he was on the Spike card as a part of the pay-per-view. But look, it's still, you know, there was a lot of filler in that broadcast last night.
Dude, I was looking at Mike Bones' article on MMA Junkie where he does the post-fight facts. And yeah, 44 minutes of fight time is what he had there. 44 minutes of fight time. How long was that broadcast, Jason? I didn't watch the broadcast.
It was like 3 hours long. I thought it was a 2 hour broadcast. And so I forget what fight it was. I think it was like, I was like, oh man, it's 10:30 and the co-main event hasn't even started yet. And then I look at my program guide and I go, oh crap, this is a card supposed to go till 12:15 Eastern time. I'm like, Jesus Christ, yeah. We don't even have a 5 round fight on this one. And then it's just, you know, there was some filler stuff. And then obviously, Dylan Danis is Bellator's version of CM Punk, of everyone wants to call him out. I'm like, you know, look, Steve Cazola had a great, great performance. Steve, they're not giving you a guy who's 0-0 and has no amateur fights.
Yeah, Steve Cazola, you're too good. You're too good. Dylan Danis is going to fight some scrubs for a while. And Steve Cazola is not a scrub. I will say, if you're a Bellator consumer or if you don't consume the Bellator product on a regular basis, highest recommendation to just wake up the morning after and watch it on Bellator.com. That's what I do, Jason, is, you know, I watch my Rockets Friday night. Granted, they lost. And then I'll wake up and I consume this card in an hour. That's awesome. You, on the other hand, out here live tweeting, spending 5 hours with Jimmy Smith, Chael Sonnen. I never saw Jen Brown because I only watched the
yeah, she was there. Yeah, they basically, you know, like, she did an interview with Lindsay Larkin. They kind of use her as, you know, to kind of fill in, you know, gaps, you know, in production elements. But I will say I'm not a big fan of their 3-man booth with adding Shell in there. I'm just not a big fan. And I'll tell you this: there was a lot of people on social media who are not a big fan of Chael Sonnen in terms of that broadcast. But
He says the same thing every, like, this is something you notice if you watch fights back to back to back and you don't have that space of commercials. He says the same thing every other fight. Like, he's, the thing with Chael is he is a very good orator. He says a combination of words in a type of way that makes you think for a second that what he's saying is cool and stuff. But when you look for the layer of depth, it just ain't there. Every other fight, he's talking about this nuanced opinion where you need to end every combination with a kick instead of starting it with a kick. It's like, bro, you said that so many times.
I've heard him saying that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Those little things. I mean, those are the things that I personally pick up on because, like, well, I work in a lot of, like production things for, like, games and stuff. So I've become such a cynic to a commentary. So I just pick up on things like that, but just stuff like that.
Yeah, but that's stuff we hear. The common person, for the most part, like, they're like, when we're, just because we're both in play-by-play broadcasting, there's things we hear the common person doesn't hear, you know, and that's why, like, it's tough for me to listen to a lot of broadcasts because I just become, like, very cynical about what's going on. You know?
I will say I love freaking Jimmy Smith. I feel like Jimmy Smith is, I think he's, like, one of the best commentators we got right now. I really do like Jimmy Smith. He could almost do a one-man booth, and I would be okay with it. I don't know what his best role is. Like, I don't know if Jimmy Smith could do the play-by-play role with, like, a color fighter with him. I know he was a former fighter, but I think Jimmy Smith is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big difference between being that play-by-play guy and being that color guy. I remember I was listening to John Anik. This was after, I think he called 208. You know, he was talking about the differences of calling a fight night card as opposed to a pay-per-view card. He said, he goes, I never realized how many liner cards are in a broadcast. Now, for people who aren't broadcasting, that liner card, what that is where your producer hands you a card and it's a sponsor read. You know, so, like, you know, if Sean Grande was reading something about Monster Energy or Blackheart Rum or something along those lines, that's a liner card where there's a guy behind him literally just handing him a card. And he knows that's when he's got to read it. And but ultimately, that's what pays the bills. You know, that's what you have to do in broadcasting.
That's why Mike and Mike in the Morning isn't necessarily a sports talk show. It's just a bunch of advertisements with a couple.
Oh man, they have
there.
A ton of reads in that car. That's a ton of reads. Yeah.
Part of my take is the best impersonation of them on their podcast, where they're like, "Welcome to the Subway Progressive Insurance, you know, Jimmy John's Hotline." You know, that's just them. I mean, that's just hilarious. I will say, like, and poor Sean Grande, like, he started the Steve Cazola bout against Jake Roberts. It's like, it's like the first TV bout, and I'm pretty sure, like, he wrote down this phenomenal line he was going to start the broadcast off with, and as he's, like, saying this line, like, action happens and the fight is over. I felt bad for him there, man. I feel like, as you want to start off, like, your feet on the ground with that first fight, so you probably prepare something as he kind of sets the narrative of the fight. And Steve Cazola, man, he did not care. He went out and he looked he was one of the stars of the card tonight.
Man, that was just an amazing, brutal combination where, I mean, look, John McCarthy gave Jake Roberts all the time to try to survive that, but just an unbelievable performance there by Steve Cazola. You know, remains undefeated, a guy that it almost been exactly 1 year since his last fight. He had fought in the World Series of Fighting, had some issues there, ultimately nearly enrolled in the military because of kind of getting a frustrations of not being able to get a fight book. He told me, credited his manager, T. Golson, for getting him back in Bellator, getting this opportunity. And then, of course, he calls out Dylan Dance, which as he's doing it, I'm just shaking my head like, come on, man. To me, I think if you're looking at Steve Cazola, I think the fight that would make sense, and my guess is Bellator doesn't go this route because it's not exactly the way they do matchmaking. It's not a matchmaking of, hey, let's match up. They try to keep guys away from each other as long as they possibly can. And that's, you know, look, that's a criticism of Bellator matchmaking, and, you know, Noah Lahat, Lloyd Carter is a perfect example of that. But to me, if Carrington Banks wins next Saturday, I would love to see them do Carrington Banks and Steve Cazola.
Ooh, that is an awesome fight. I think,
but not that exactly. That's not in the book of Bellator matchmaking, though. Let's be honest.
I know. Look, here's. I'll put on my Bellator cap. So Steve Cazola, let's give him a fight against Furious George Hernandez. Now you may ask, who is George Hernandez? He's 4-4. He's a 35-year-old welterweight. So far, he's lost 4 consecutive fights, including a fight on Explode Fight Series Taco. So a 4-fight losing streak. If I'm Bellator, I give him a fight against George Hernandez. What do you think?
Man, if he loses an Explode Fight Series, what's that say about you?
This dude started out 3-0. I mean, this was an Explode Fight Series main event. I love the name, by the way. Taco.
Okay, all right. First off, what was his opponent's record?
Chris Padilla, who was actually 7-2.
Wow. Hernandez was the one coming in the loose.
Yeah, Hernandez was the Brooklyn Brawler here in this situation. Oh wait, oh, so the event was called Taco, and Chris Padilla's nickname is Taco. But surprisingly, after the Explode Fight Series, he signed a deal with RFA, and since then he's lost 2 of his 3 fights. So I guess that was poor Taco.
You always wonder when a promotion decides to sign a guy from the Explode Fight Series, like how nervous are you by the time he actually steps into the cage and what you're going to get?
Well, if you're Bellator, you're not, because you know the guy you want to win is going to win. So,
man, but you know, big win by Steve Cazola, you know, dominating victory. But yeah, let's stop this fighters calling out you know, a jiu-jitsu guy who's never had an amateur fight, never had a pro fight. Let's stop that. I mean, it's very like Vitor Belfort calling out CM Punk. Like, seriously, you think the UFC would book that fight, and B, you think some regulatory commission's going to sanction that? What do you want, sanction a murder?
Okay. No, that fight's going to happen in Texas. That fight could happen. Look, Dylan Danis is definitely the version, like the Sage Northcutt version. Although, like, I'm actually optimistic about Dylan Danis. Like, I think he's going to be good, but who knows? But yeah, he's Bellator Sage Northcutt, Bellator CM Punk.
But the problem is with Dylan Danis, what happens if he can't get the fight to the ground?
What happens if he can't get the fight to the ground? I mean, he'll be just as unconscious as Chase Gormley, probably.
Man, that was a brutal knockout. Oof.
I felt so stupid.
But you know what? I mean, the thing is, I mean, early on that fight, I was like, man, Chase might win this. I mean, Sergey, I've never seen him as tentative as he was. Obviously, that's a clear response to getting knocked out in 16 seconds. There was a nice little flurry where I thought, but you know, one of the things when I talked to Chase, he told me, he's like, look, I've got to be the aggressor. I gotta start being a power puncher. I can't be this volume, you know, puncher. And that's what he was being. He was still sticking to that volume route, and good Lord, what a knockout. And by the way, look, love Jimmy Smith, but let's not talk Sergey Kharitonov and title. This guy just got knocked out in 16 seconds 4 months ago.
Look, Sergey Kharitonov fought the best in the world, man. Arlovsky, Barnett, Nogueira, over.
Who's his best win in the last 4 years?
The fact that he shared a cage with Javi Ayala, to me, is a win. Why are you laughing? Javi Ayala is the greatest.
We know you are the president of the Javi Ayala fan club. But seriously, okay, you say his best win, you would have to go back to 2011. That's Andre Arlovsky. Since then, loses to Barnett. Then he had a win against John Delgado, Alexei Cuttin, Tyler East, and 2 wins against Kenny Garner, now Chase Gormley. When you look at his last 6 wins, is Chase Gormley the best win?
Yeah. No, yeah, no, that's the best win. You know, but Garner and Tyler East are really good prospects in 2010. So, not the worst, but definitely
Not 2014, 2015.
Yeah, no, you're right. I don't know, Jason, the heavyweight division in Bellator is one big awkward thing to think about. I don't really – what are they doing in this division again?
Well, it was announced on the broadcast that there's going to be a title sometime in 2017. I think the last time we had it, what was it 2014 or 2015, the last time there was a title fight in Bellator?
Wait, that was the announcement. In 2017, we will have a title.
By the way, should there be a catchweight title in Bellator?
Rampage division?
There has been 28 fights on main card fights in Bellator in 2017. Nine of them have been catchweight.
28?
28 total fights. Nine of them have been catchweight.
Now, I'm no mathematician, but that appears to be about a third.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. I mean, it's just – but also, you know what I find interesting, though, is every time after a UFC fighter misses weight for early weigh-ins, it's like the hot take of, oh, it's the early weigh-ins that are killing this, and this is why guys are missing weight. Why do we never hear that about Bellator?
Well, no one talks about Bellator.
It's crazy because they do the early weigh-ins. The only thing that's different with them is they just do the ceremonial weigh-ins earlier. They do it 2 o'clock local time as opposed to – 4 or 5 o'clock local time in the UFC. But I was thinking about that on Thursday, and I was like, you always hear about when, UFC guy misses weight, but you never hear that same narrative in when a Bellator fighter misses weight of, oh, it's early weigh-ins.
Yeah. I mean,
is it just because no one cares about a Bellator weigh-in?
Yeah. No, I think that's it. I mean, I think simply put, that's the reason why. We may hear that if you have guys miss weight at Bellator 180, that could be a part of the narrative. But I mean, people were checked out of this one mentally, and that's probably a reason why. I mean, Jason, I'm gonna spitball here. I'm gonna give you an idea for your MMA report. Maybe do just a long ass show where you figure out the weigh-in thing. All right, you need to just sit down and figure out what's going on.
I will tell you, in July, I'm planning on heading up to the ABC hearing annual meeting. And planning to do a couple of shows with a bunch of regulatory bodies. And one of them is, hopefully to have Mike Mazzulli and Andy Foster both on at the same time where we can talk about this. I think it's a conversation to have. I think at the end of the day, fighters are going to, I don't know if there's truly anything a commission is going to realistically be able to do to stop massive weight cutting.
I know, and it's because like I go through just so many different ways of how to talk about these things, because when you look at Emmanuel Sanchez miss weight, I mean, like, what do you say? Do you chastise Sanchez? Are you like, you idiot? Why sign a deal and then not show up at that weight? But obviously, he's trying his damn best. I mean, these fighters have such strong mental ability, such a great work ethic to get to this level, like from a talent level. To get there, to train every single day to be a Bellator fighter, a UFC fighter, they are anomalies. They are outliers. So they are driven people. Yeah, they have pride. So I guess the issue is the culture around cutting massive amounts of weight. Like, I don't know what to criticize. This is an issue. Like,
yeah, I mean, I love the fact that Emmanuel Sanchez, he owned up to it.
Then he called for a title shot.
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, I'll talk in his post-fight media scrum. The way I took it, he didn't give exact details, but it sounds like basically he needs to, eat better in terms of nutrition. Probably needs to bring somebody in that basically, puts together his meals or whatnot. But right when he calls for a title shot, I'm like, oh my God, he just did not seriously call for a title shot. After missing weight by 3.5 pounds. And I think that we can all agree that as long as Daniel Vichel defeats John Teixeira coming up here in 2 weeks, that he is going to get the winner of Patricio Pitbull and Daniel Strauss, which is 3 weeks away. And let's also remember, Daniel Vichel has a win over Emmanuel Sanchez last year.
Yeah, the only way that Daniel Vichel fight doesn't happen is, John Teixeira could obviously win that fight, but the only way that fight doesn't happen, they don't get the next title shot, is if they miss weight by more than 149 pounds. Like, maybe if they show up at John Lineker weight at 187 for this 145-pound fight, maybe that fight doesn't happen. But yeah, it's Weichel. It's John Teixeira. The winner of that fight gets a title shot. I felt like for Emmanuel Sanchez, you just kind of come across silly. Obviously, you always want to talk about what's in your best interest, but that becomes a bit of a distraction. I will circle around Jason, though, and say that Emmanuel Sanchez did look great.
Oh,
he had no split decision, 30-27. He went out and he beat Marcus Galvao. I mean, great striking out of him.
Oh, I mean, I think you can look at it and say it's probably the best performance we have seen out of Emmanuel Sanchez since coming in the Bellator. But, you know, when you look at the current Bellator featherweight division, you say, okay, what's it, you know, if you're going to put, you know, Emmanuel Sanchez as that next guy in line after the winner of Weichel and Teixeira, you could say maybe he fights a loser of that fight. I would expect that, you know, Weichel's going to win that fight, so you could say John Teixeira. But then when you look at the rest of the Bellator featherweight division, okay, you've got, you know, potential guys you could say. Well, Pat Kern. Well, he's already fought Pat Kern. I know Pat is looking to come back in sometime in the summer. Georgia Karahanyan has talked about, you know, potentially, you know, going up to 155, you know, but he is apparently still interested in staying at 145, and he's interested in fighting Noah Lahat, which we'll get into Noah Lahat here. Noah Lahat, I think, would be another name, but I don't weigh Bellator slow building him. I don't think they'd put him into that matchup. And then there's really no one else. I mean, yeah. So I think Emmanuel Sanchez, he's kind of in this bad position. I mean, it was a great win for him. But you know, when you miss weight by 3.5 pounds, that kid, and he admitted in his post fight scrum that he knows missing weight is not going to give him that title shot. And I think if you're Bellator, this is, and I think it's kind of familiar to the Joe Tymingo situation from last year, where you guys sit there and say, Emmanuel, we got to put you in another fight. You got to show that you can make championship weight.
Yeah. And I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, he certainly has a lot of momentum. I don't know why he starts the fight off like rubbing his nipples. I don't know if you caught that. That was kind of weird.
Yeah. That was really weird. Yeah.
Yeah, that was interesting. But
it almost makes you now want to go back to Emmanuel Sanchez fight and goes, did we just miss this in all his other fights? Or is this brand new?
Yeah, and to me, nipples sell. Nipples is it's a great word. It's interesting. I feel like if you just go out there and own it, like you're just the nipple guy, like you start every round just squeezing your nips, that could get you over, man. That's a good gimmick. But with that being said, he's really putting it together from a skill set standpoint. So he needs to do two things. He needs to return to the featherweight division, unless he doesn't think he can make that weight, but I think he does, and win again, and he's probably going to get a title shot. That is kind of where he's set, but it's certainly not there quite yet. I mean, Marcus Galvao, such a highly skilled fighter. He has some success at taking the fight down, but for the most part, not so much. This was all Sanchez, and I do think if things go right for him, he could be looking at a title shot in very late 2017, early 2018. That could be the upside for Sanchez. That's kind of the best case scenario for what's next for him.
The other side doesn't help him as effective. He's gone to the decision now, set with 8 straight fights.
Exactly. No, that is.
Think about this. He has 9 fights in Bellator. And he's already got 2 hours of cage time.
That's
pretty impressive. I mean, you know, that in a way you got to say, man, that's pretty impressive. A lot of cage time. It's a big win for Emmanuel Sanchez. And the only other fight we haven't talked about from the main card, Noah Lahat gets a submission win over Lloyd Carter in the second round. Rear naked choke. You know, this was clearly a showcase fight. He was a 10-1 favorite in this fight. Ends up getting clipped by a jab in the first round, but, you know, superior grappling that Noah Lahat said. And then, of course, after the fight says, you know, basically willing to fight anyone on the New York City card. And I think it was within a couple minutes of him saying that, Georgia Karahanyan on social media says, sign me up, I'm ready to go. So, you know, that's a fight that does make sense. But I know in the past, Georgia has told me that, you know, the weight cut was becoming a toll on him. So he was looking at potentially going to 155. But, you know, it's a good win for Noah Lahat. But, you know, in terms of, you know, the criticism Bellator matchmaking, this is the type of example where people say, man, you don't exactly get me excited about watching some of these fights.
Mm-hmm. This was interesting, but not really. I mean, Lahat went dominated, got the submission, had the scare where Lloyd Carter hit him with the jab. But in this type of scenario, I mean, you got to win like in 30 seconds if you're Nola Hot, because this is a clear showcase fight. There's a dramatic size difference and a dramatic skill difference. And not a whole lot to say, man. This was just a fight to pad the resume.
Yeah, in terms of the preliminary card, two matchups to note. Joaquin Buckley got a unanimous decision win over Justin Patterson in a welterweight matchup. That was a matchup that my understanding is Bellator was really interested to see how that would go down. Buckley coming out of that St. Louis MMA scene, a lot of people very high on him. And also the former Legacy Fights Bantamweight champion Manny Vasquez, he got a win over Nate Williams by unanimous decision in a catchweight bout of 130 pounds. And as we begin to wrap up here, so after these fights are over, I knew the CES fights were going on, and I flip right over, and it's right at the end where Chris Curtis ends up getting a stoppage victory to retain the welterweight title against Wilfredo Santiago. And I've really noticed something about the Access broadcast is they love to say, well, how about we do the champion of X promotion versus the champion of another promotion? I'm sitting there going, oh, that's great for television. It's not great for fighters, because now you're basically saying, oh, we want you to take a UFC-level fight, but for regional money. I'm like, come on, can we stop this narrative?
Yeah, I mean, it's cute every once in a while, but from the perspective of the fighter, that's a great way of putting it, Jason.
If I was Chris Curtis' manager and they came with me, I'd be like, so you paying me 10 and 10?
Oh, yeah. Because
I'll tell you this. The answer's going to be, oh, hell no.
Yeah. No, we gotta pay Boss Ruin. Dude, I mean, that's so right. Like, the risk of losing is just not worth the reward of the paycheck. I mean, you gotta turn the light bill on. But Chris Curtis looked good to you?
He struggled early. Wilfredo Santiago, he's a guy that you know what's coming. It's right and lefts. You know, that's what he is. He got off to a good start in this fight, but ultimately Chris Curtis ends up catching him. And you talk about good call-outs. Chris Curtis calling out Mike Perry. Talk about how his boxing's crap. I'm like, all right, good job, Chris Curtis. Don't call a CSL fighter. Call a UFC fighter out. Smart move.
Yeah, it is.
But, you know, Mike Perry's one of those guys that people just love to call out.
Yeah, Mike Perry might talk smack about you back, and that may get you a shot. But, I mean, yeah, Mike Perry, he has said some stupid things. I think maybe that's why people don't like him. But he's also a pretty exciting fighter. So, you know.
There's a reason the UFC puts up with him.
Yeah.
If he was a boring wrestler, he would not be in the UFC. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah, dude, that's...
I'm not saying anything crazy. Mm-hmm. That is not hashtag fake news.
Well...
By the way, I think the new game should be every time my president says fake news, just take a shot.
Yeah, I'll be dead of alcohol poisoning tomorrow. I mean, shoot. Oh, my God. Fake news. Fake sports weekend. Big fake sports weekend with pro wrestling. I mean, it's... You know, I was... In Dallas last year when WrestleMania was in town, is that your hood? No, your hood's Tampa, right? That's your hood?
Yeah, Orlando is to get to the, what's it? It's now called the Camping World Stadium. In traffic, with no traffic, I can get there easily hour and a half.
Oh, that's not bad.
With traffic, especially for a WrestleMania weekend, well, that's probably a 2-hour drive.
Is there a general mood around your area that WrestleMania is in town or not so much?
No, I mean Tampa is a WWE town because a lot of the guys live here. Because it was funny as I was in the gym the other day and I asked a buddy, I go, hey, what happened to Sheamus's right eye? He goes, what do you mean? I go, oh, he's here at the gym and that right eye is jacked up. And then I guess like he had some type of injury happen, you know, during a match, but. I wouldn't say that I have a ton of friends that are like all giddy about WWE. I have a couple, you know, I've seen him put stuff on Facebook, but, you know, I guess I'm just out of that world. I mean, I'll tune in once or twice a year. Usually if I'm going to tune in for WWE, it's either WrestleMania or Royal Rumble. Just cause Royal Rumble, you know, you're going to get some of the old school guys in there.
Yeah, and this one, it'll be interesting to see how many old school guys. I mean, you don't get more old school than this. I mean, Jason, without looking, how many WrestleMania matches can you name?
Let's see. I've seen the advertising for Goldberg and Lesnar.
Yeah.
I saw the ESPN interview with Triple H. I don't know who he's wrestling.
Seth Rollins.
Okay. I haven't seen anything. John Cena, is he on this card?
Okay, so John Cena is wrestling with his girlfriend, Nikki Bella, and he's taking on The Miz and Maurice, and the whole scuttlebutt, and tell me how romantic is this, is John Cena supposed to propose to his girlfriend after the match?
Okay, is that like just like for television, or is that real life?
Well, dude, so they have this Total Divas show, so I don't know. It's like both. Like,
saying you're a Total Divas fan?
My mom watches it, and I just happen to watch it.
Okay. Nice excuse.
Yeah, but you want to talk about investment in time, dude. I don't know what time this WWE card's starting, but there are 13 matches on it.
Well, I think they start like 6 or 7 o'clock. I will say this. I saw on my Facebook timeline, I guess someone, one of the news stations in Orlando was doing like an overhead shot from a helicopter. Mm-hmm. They have got one long-ass ramp for this card.
They do. They really.
Oh yeah.
This is going to be. So this is the football stadium or the basketball arena?
Oh no. This is the football stadium. This is where they have the Citrus Bowl.
No school plays here.
No school. Yeah. No. UCF has a. They built their own on site campus.
Oh, this is the soccer facility. Now I see. This is where the Orlando City FC plays.
Orlando City FC, I believe, has a new stadium, but they've played there in the past. They do, you know, they do soccer matches. It's like a 40,000 seat stadium. It's gone through a lot of renovations over the past couple of years, but it's an older football stadium. You know, steel seats. I mean, I went there last year for the FSU spring game. But yeah, it's an outdoor stadium, which, you know, it's always I think, but man, you know, doing an event in Florida. Oof, man, that's always a tough risk. We haven't got a lot of rain this year, so I probably just cursed them. So that means it's going to rain tomorrow.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine? They got to have a roof up.
Oh, but, no, here's the way I always say is, you want it to rain in Florida? Just have me go wash my car. Did that on Wednesday? Yep, Thursday it rained.
Take whatever you do, Jason, for the love of God, for our wrestling fans everywhere, leave your car dirty. Hey, but I tell you what, for wrestling fans everywhere, at 6:30 Eastern, tonight on Saturday, you can watch ROH Supercard of Honor. Watch it. Hardy Boys versus Young Bucks ladder match. ROH World Championship, Christopher Daniels and Dalton Castle. There's going to be a Texas Bull Rope match.
Okay.
I don't know what that means.
But, I have no idea what that means either. But no, look, everyone catch that on Fight, of course, coming up this next weekend. We've got UFC 210. We're going to have a preview podcast next week for that, DC and Rumble. I did have to kind of laugh seeing the quotes out of the media call about basically Cormier being like, all he can do is knock me out. Okay, are you telling us something we don't know?
Yeah, and all Tom Brady can do is throw the football to his receivers.
It's just like when Cormier said, oh, I'm going to stand with Rumble. Okay, sure you are. Sure you are. That ain't happening. Yeah, you're going to stay with him from the start, but come on. We know you, DC. You're going to try to get this in the clinch, get him against the fence, probably try to, you know, do a little dirty boxing, try to get a sweep takedown. Yeah, DC, we know what you are. And I still say I think the UFC wants Rumble to win this. Even with all of Rumble's past issues, I think they want Rumble to win this.
Oh, yeah, past issues. Yo. You got domestic violence on your resume, whether it be an accusation or definitive, that is deserved baggage, and that's going to be there for them. But it doesn't appear that that's he's the main event in this card.
I can tell you one of our topics on the pre-fight show coming up. So this is a little, you know, give me a little heads up here. Mm-hmm. So we know who the top two fights on this fight card are.
Yeah,
you know, the fights that people are interested in. You know, Weidman Musasi is a big matchup. Even though, I don't know if you saw this. Gengar Musasi coming out saying that this is the last fight on his UFC deal. Oh, that sounds like Bellator bound.
I was going to say Ryzen.
You know,
yeah.
But what's the third best fight on this card?
Well, we will save it because I still need to do some.
Oh, yeah. There's Slim Pickens. I will say,
you know what I'm looking forward to, though? You're right, Slim Pickens. But by the way, there's this restaurant called Slim Chickens in the Valley. You should try it if you ever come by. Okay. Anyways, just keep that in mind. You ever come down to Hidalgo. Desmond Green, man. Nice to see him in the UFC finally. Looking forward to that.
early prelims he's going to be on. You know, there's a couple interesting fights, but yeah, you look it's clear. Number one, number two fight are clear.
Yeah.
Can you know, that number three fight, I mean, I've got a fight I'm leaning towards, but man, there's...
I got one, and I can't wait to tell you, Jason. This is high-level podcasting. We're setting up the next one, but I got one, and I feel like it's probably the same one you have, too, especially because I think this guy's a Florida guy, but yeah.
Yeah. So we'll get into that. That podcast will come out on Friday, April the 7th, one day before UFC 210, so look out for that. Of course, I'll have a regular MMA Report podcast coming up on Wednesday, so be on the lookout for that, of course. You can listen to these podcasts on RadioInfluence.com, also iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and now available on Google Play.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I'm stoked to talk. This is the first year that I'm talking about bridging the gap between the front and back of house, because it's something that I've seen and I've watched restaurant owners struggle with, and my clients struggle with it all the time, about that respect that both people have to have for each other. And it's massive.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, in Panini Pete's, when I opened my first place 11 years ago, that was one of the biggest things that I focused on. And I ran the place from the line, you know, for the first 5 years. And, you know, that's critical. There's always been that divide, you know, since I was 14 years old working in restaurants. And we've done such a good job of creating a better culture. And, you know, I'm not revolutionary in that area. There's a lot of restaurants that pull it off. But the ones that don't, you can really, really tell.
Yeah.
And you can tell the people that come from those environments, you know, absolutely, where they're just being a dick just to be a dick and with for no reason. And it's just, you know, we all need each other. We're different. They have different roles. You know, somebody gets to be nice and pretty and make tips and you know, bust a table or two, and then somebody else is back there sweating and with cornstarch in their crotch and freaking miserable. Absolutely. And fire and cut.
Chef slurry. I got a slurry. You know,
but that's who we are. We're that damaged group that, you know, we embrace the pain and we get there on the line. That's what we do, and you can't be upset about it. You have to just freaking love it, man. Like Hodad always said, it's not life and death, it's lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
So don't stress the fuck out, you know?
Dude, I got to write that down. It's not life or death, it's lunch and dinner.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.